is voluntary.
But the SLSP line would seem to indicate...
Is that my personal?
But the party, has the party adopted any particular line on this?
No, I don't think that any party would be supporting its broad, because I am certain that there are 500,000 at least who would want to be repatriated.
You don't think so?
No, I think there would be.
Oh, I see.
If not a larger number.
Oh, so then in that sense, agreement is not...
Yes, I mean, there are bound to be a fair number who would want, who are now dissatisfied that there is not this freedom to leave Ceylon. But equally there are others who don't want to be repatriated. But I have no doubt that a number about 500,000 would want to get back to India.
What have you to say with regard to the difference between the present UNP line of action and the act they have passed and the Sirimao Shastri agreement?
Well, I don't know what the act, they really, the difference boils down to whether they are to be repatriated or not.
Yes, the same proportions, but they are, according to the act, they are merely recognized as nationals.
But then they would be given, I take it, freedom to
go
if they were.
And arrangements would seem to
be made for their receiving them at the other end too.
But I think it's a staged, phased out.
But then that was within the pact itself provided for facing it out, no, 15 years or something.
But the question is whether they'll be given the freedom to go. They might, after they have been nationals, what is there to prevent the government saying, you can go but we won't allow you to take any money? After that point. Of course, then there is another line of action. There are some Sinhalese who say you must make conditions so bad for them that they want to go. How far are the instrument? Of the planters. At least how far is the Thondaman group and the estate worker?
And the planters? More of the Indian government than the planters.
You mean they are susceptible to directives from India? In that case, you're supporting the Sinhalese thesis that these people are aliens.
No, the leadership of the Ceylon Workers' Congress is susceptible to, to whatever pressure or whatever directive the government of India. And since the broad mass still has confidence in that leadership, so that's a purely temporary or, passing phase.
How strong is the ASIS group?
But not as strong as Thondaman, is it?
One third?
About a third.
What about the LSSPR? Do they have any union? None.
In the plantation?
LSSP?
LSSP, yes, but very small. At the moment, really.
Doesn't CP, Peking Wing, have fairly...
Still small. Very small.
But aren't they strong in one or two areas?
They may be...
Pardon?
Means nothing, in terms of the plantation working class.
Now, I presume you are taking a different subject. I presume you are opposed to federalism. How strong a hold has this concept got in the northern and eastern province? I mean, I was wondering how far it was really a concoction of the...
The federal demand is...
Yes.
The federal demand really expresses dissatisfaction of the Tamil middle class. against the various changes that have taken place. But I don't think there is a demand for a federal state as such. You know, it's only an expression of a discontent on some other questions.
Mm. Now, to what extent are the Tamils in the north and east able to use the Tamil in their correspondence with the government?
I don't know, really, frankly. I have not been there since May.
No, in that period, say in May and in the SLFP times?
Well, even in the SLFP times, they could use it as far as the village committees and things like that were concerned. There was no question of their...
No, I was wondering about communications with Colombo.
No, even there they would have served them in Tamil and been advised in English, I think, which is what continues even now.
One final sphere, if I may, and that's the civil service and administrative structure. Have you any comments to make on the civil service as it existed in, say, the 40s and 50s, on their orientation, structure, defects, assets?
So, as they existed in 40s?
In, say, late 40s, around 48, 49, early 50s.
They were the civil arm of the ruling power. And those attitudes, of course, continue to this day, no?
What would you say were the attitudes?
Of certainly being unmoved by mass pressure.
Not identified with the people.
Not identified with the people and carrying out, policies and directives that emanate from the top.
Yes, but since the ministers are amenable to the people, isn't there a connection?
Yes, yeah, so to that attitude has, what one may say, modified. But since most of the ministers in their turn are finally not amenable to mass pressure.
That is a rightly minister.
Yeah. And certainly that the top brass of the civil service are, even now, I can say, hostile.
Hostile to whom?
To the mass. And that came in during the coalition government, the little period phase of the coalition government.
But don't you think that since 56 and with the widening recruitment, civil servants are becoming more and more identifiable with the people and more responsive?
Not the civil service itself. No? Because for one thing, that recruitment I don't think has widened. Or the odd chap who gets in soon gets caught or soon is absorbed into the setup.
But I thought the pressures are such, you see, the local MPs have been important. Bandar Naik stressed the importance of the local MPs. He told the civil servants that they are your rulers now.
Yeah.
And things like that. And I was wondering whether they haven't been forced to give considerable recognition to the winds of change.
But when it comes to the real layer, that is the permanent secretary layer, I don't think it has changed very much. The cadet certainly would have, I would agree, or even the chap who goes as GA, in that he comes directly in contact with the MP and with the, various rural organizations and things like that.
Would you then favor the American system where they have a change of the top player with the change of government?
Oh, that's preferable, I think, to this.
And the problems arising out of that?
Yeah, that means there are problems. But certainly from the point of view I have of a minister concerned, it's much better that he has a top civil servant in whom he has confidence. Rather than the present system where you have to choose between certain, choice is limited to those who are there already.
But how would you maintain a continuity of policy? I'm not saying that continuity of policy is essential. Obviously there will be a change in certain lines. there are lots of spheres of decision where whoever is in power, the decision would be the same. But if you change both men at the top, there might not be continuity of policy in these lines, but in these spheres. Not only that, there will be delay, because two people have to get used to the new subject. And the delay might be crucial.
Anyway, better to delay and carry through a policy rather than have civil servants who are from the very outset opposed to the policy and would do their very best to sabotage it or kill it from within.
Now, that statement is very interesting. You are implying that the permanent secretaries, I'm talking about that level, because they are not pro-SLSP or pro-left, would obstruct policy.
Anyway, a genuine left-wing government has to get rid of these fellows. I know.
No, but the implication is that they won't follow the minister's policy if they don't like it. Why do you say that?
Well, from the little experience one has here, you can, that's so. Say, for instance, this inability of one minister to reinstate on source, I'm taking a very trifling matter.
But till we know what reasons were given, it's difficult to...
Yes, he would have given very solid reasons in terms of the administrative rules and regulations and whatever else. I'm not interested in that, you know. I mean, they are bound by those rules and, you know, that's their basic weakness.
So then it's not a question of orientation, but it's a question of rules. And respect for a certain
Those rules are part of those this top layer or equally.
Yes, but it may not be. Are they due to the orientation, or is it just something?
You see, their orientation is one. They themselves come from a particular class that is so linked up with the very class that any left-wing government has to strike at. It would be unreasonable to expect them to work out policies that's going to strike at.
But if I may put it in this way, say the UNP government, that in the UNP time, some UNP members of somebody are dismissed. Say for a marginal reason, borderline reason. And if the LSS and we're saying when the SLSP was governing, this happens to some UNP people, and for fairly good reason, and the UNP comes back and orders these people reinstated, wouldn't the civil servants raise the same objection that it is, on the grounds that it is against the rules?
I'll ask you, Now, you see, the UNP recently appointed Amir as Attorney General and Nandita Siddhali as a Permanent Secretary.
Yeah, but they were going completely against tradition in bringing Nandita.
Yeah, but having the civil servants and others, and supposing this type of appointment was made by the SLSP.
Yes.
What would have been the reaction of this the civil service top brass? And how meekly and nicely they put up with it when the UNP implemented it?
Mm-hmm. No, but you have a point there. But coming back to my point, I was thinking that in certain situations, the rules being what they are and the fact that they are sticking to them being a feature of the times, don't you think that whoever was in power, the civil servant would take the same line?
Well, I think he would. I feel that he would be more elastic or more ready to adjust himself to decisions that the UNP government takes and find formally and other things of support. Rather than, I don't know, even SLFP, I personally don't think they would be such a wide gulf, certainly a left-wing government currently. He would,
Because I think there's a serious presumption here that some of our senior men are partial in the policies. Whereas I think we shouldn't accept it without criticism, that we should be willing to figure the alternative that some of them, a good proportion of them, will serve any government that they come under.
I agree they will serve. I mean, they won't be rebels, or they won't that open way unfurl the banner of revolt.
Mm-hmm.
That they won't do it, because they are too intelligent and too clever for that. That H.T.D. Serum will do it. Or Sydney Soldier might do that. But the civil servants are of a different caliber from that mob. They will do it far more subtly.
Okay, but you are accepting the point that they resist.
Oh yes, because they come from a certain social layer. Which social layer, the interests of which, have to be attacked. On that basis that they are resistant to it. I take it that most of these civil servants have their own private investments. Have their own, you know. And when a government goes for that.
No, but the point being that you're denying that they have any loyalty to the government chosen by the people. And that they are not willing to implement the policies of any government, a left government chosen by the people. I can name several who will serve any government and who won't care to which is in power.
Hey, you are bound to find certain individuals of that type. You find them in every country. But equally you find in every country, not only in Ceylon, civil servants who would, you know, not wholeheartedly implement.
But now, for instance, this question, I know this insistence on this wholehearted...
Now, I'll take a very simple thing. Take Jaffna. Do you think any single civil servant from Jaffna, coming from the Vellala community, is going to implement any law that is going to be the prejudice of that community in Jaffna? And that is going to promote the interests of the today's depressed caste? I can't think of a single civil servant.
Mm-hmm. So that can be got wrong.
No, similar. I'm taking it in its crudest.
Mm-hmm. But, I was trying to think of examples. I know some civil servants are political, you know, just not politically inclined and just don't care to who. Then there are others who might even resist the UNP, though they are UNP inclined, because the minister has given what they consider to be a foolish order. And they might subtly resist that. So there you don't get wholehearted cooperation with UNP.
But then, you know, it depends on what are the measures that and how strongly they feel on these measures that the government is seeking to implement. So sure. I can't think of the present lot of permanent secretaries being enthusiastic implementers of any socialist policy. For the simple reason they haven't that background. For them, all these policies must be utterly ruinous. So I don't expect a man who believes that a policy is ruinous seeking to work that policy wholeheartedly.
What does it matter if the minister is...
I don't think you, suppose you are convinced that a particular policy is ruinous, or, you know, I say no trade with Britain, or take any, whatever.
Yes, right.
That you are going to implement that policy with that...
Yes, but the minister is on top.
Yeah, minister may be on top, that's not the... For a moment, I'm not saying the minister is not on top. Minister, this is the policy minister has formulated. But you have your misgivings of those policies.
What can you do?
The minister will know that if that is so, that he would want a chap who believes in those policies, who thinks that those policies can be implemented that way and have to be implemented. He will go for such a chap, won't he? So that's the idea when it comes
but
to
how,
the
board. What are you going to do? How are you going to have a turnover? What are you going to do with the previous steps?
I don't
and
know.
All the experience. I mean, that's an important practical question.
What is that? You sack the fellow. That's nothing to about it.
Yes.
I mean, I'm talking of given a revolution to government.
Yes. But then
there have been a number of fellows who have civil servants, not merely not if not in this country, in other countries, who have lost their jobs
mm-hmm.
after every.
All right.
And
then.
Some are kept over because they in the meantime they come over.
All right. But say we are depending on the electoral process. 5 years later, the other government comes. What are you going to do?
I don't know about the electoral process.
Then, I mean, say, SLFP believes in that. If there is electoral, then you can't do it.
I don't know. Maybe. I'm not saying that SLFP can do these things. Not at all.
And you're also assuming that anybody can administer.
I don't think that's... after all, revolutions are precisely that. Sorry. Huh?
I don't think you can use a Russian example to...
No, no, but not only Russian, in all countries that were all, even before the Russian Revolution.
But won't there be administrative chaos for...
Of course there must be, maybe chaos, of course. But it's much better that there be chaos, rather than that policy be given to your enemies to implement. I dare say there was utter chaos after the French Revolution. But I mean, Robespierre or whoever, the chaps were, they would have been damn digging their own graves if they entrusted their policies to be carried out by the old courtiers of the king. But that chaos is a smaller price to pay than, you know, entrusting these chaps or your enemies with the carrying out of your policy. Sometimes we have to keep these fellows on and then set up a committee to observe them and to, you know, as you had in Russia.
The sort of commissar.
Quiet. Mm-hmm. And you had to get the authority, proposal of the of a hostile civil servant or general or army general or navy commander or, to be countermanded or to be, or not countermanded, to be approved by another body, not of professional civil servants or professional soldiers, but of civilian authority. I have so many other...
No, I was also interested in this argument because the SLFP put it forward while still maintaining outwardly that this electoral thing should take place. And I was thinking of the practical limitations there are. You might have a system like in America where you have a switchover but you have to get the whole system aligned to that sort of thing. And the chaps who are present permanent secretaries will have other posts as assistants or something. But then the whole question goes down one question further. If you take this argument as a logical conclusion, the whole administration has to be changed.
Yeah.
What the permanent secretary says may not be implemented by the assistant secretary because it's... and where do we go from there?
So you may have to have this system of some sort of vigilance committees or some sort of...
The commissar. I'm afraid I've kept too long.
End of interview 2 on the 25th of September 1967 with V. Karala Singham.
If I may raise the subject of land settlement in the 40s, I was wondering what the main purpose was.
The land settlement was started very much earlier than the 40s. I believe the Land Settlement Act, coming from the old, what was the Wastelands Ordinance.